What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Blockhash Exploring the Blockchain. Quick message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting is a top Bitcoin and crypto betting site that allows you to place bets in casino games, sports books, racing, gaming, you name it. It's your money. You should be able to.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Have fun with it too, outside of traditional investing. So check out all the action at nitrobetting.eu. All links are in the description below. Enjoy the episode, guys. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Blockhash Exploring the Blockchain, episode 364. Today, I have Roy Hui, founder of Lightlink, here today to talk about their L2 and what they are doing within the blockchain space. Roy, welcome to the podcast, man. Super happy to have you here. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. It's fantastic to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Likewise. Pleasure's all mine. Please tell me a little bit about yourself. I'm sure people are curious, you know, who is Roy? What have you done so far in the past within this industry? What's your background?
Yeah, sure thing, Brendan. I've been in technology industry for the past 22 years, so a very long time. I've been a technology entrepreneur, so building tech business for the past 15 years. So also a long period of time as well. Before hopping onto blockchain, we built large video gaming communities. And I think it's interesting to see how many technical founders pursue that trait, building something that they're fascinated about and deeply entertained with, right? So we built an online community before there was a word called social network, and eventually that turned into a social network. We partnered with many different large media companies around the world. And eventually that pivoted into a global e-commerce company because we saw a marketplace capability around that technology and started building around those marketplaces capabilities. And eventually that turned into a cross-border e-commerce company where we took brands around the world and helped them with their digital capabilities to go into Asia. And we grew that business and eventually exited that business in 2015, 2016. And that led us to the first wave of the crypto ICO boom, right? So it was an exciting time. And we were looking at where we could spend most of our time, where we can add value. Crypto was the place to be. So we built capabilities around providing digital wallets, building exchanges, digital payment solutions, and became a Web3 builder, as we call it these days, back in 2015.
Very nice, man. So you've been a builder all the way since 2015 for a good solid, 9 years now?
In a Web3 space, correct. But I've had a computer science degree back in the late 90s, right? And throughout my career, it's just been building technology. And I saw fantastic revolution in terms of how technology has evolved, right? Like from Web 1 to Web 2, and now from Web 2 to Web 3, and that immutable anchoring truth capability where blockchain was able to provide is something that I've never seen before and deeply fascinated by.
Awesome, man. And was that like partially the inspiration for why you wanted to start Lightlink, or was there something else in particular that made a light bulb go off in your head and you're like, I want to build a layer two and I want to solve this kind of issue right now?
Yeah, great question. So when we were building blockchain businesses, one of the fundamental capabilities that we had was our enterprise blockchain. And we deployed this capability to large financial institutions, investment banks, and, you know, many other things. But it lacked really the interoperability, the composability, the transparency that public blockchains had, right? So it couldn't really talk to the world, and the world couldn't really talk to these private blockchains without configuration and permissions and things like that. And that was happening. I saw the fantastic innovation that came out from Ethereum, large open permissionless blockchains. And that was super inspiring, right? Looking at new ways of financial infrastructure being constructed on top of each other, being composable, right? And in 2021, we embraced the whole NFT boom as well and done many different NFT projects and saw the crazy gas fees that incurred on layer ones, right? And all the gas wars and people minting and couldn't mint and paying hundreds of dollars for an NFT and all those crazy issues for layer ones. And within that time, there were a little bit more popularization of the concepts of layer twos. And I saw that to be a hybrid between the two, you know, had the composability and transparencies of layer ones, but it didn't have all those issues with both sides on both private blockchains and layer ones. So we reconfigured our private enterprise blockchain into a layer two configuration and launched it into the public market. That's the genesis of Lightlink.
In terms of it being an L2, what do you feel makes it different compared to other L2s out there on the market? There's obviously quite a lot of them, and they all have, I think, different features. But what, I guess, features or characteristics for Lightlink make it different?
Yeah, we have this unique capability. We call it the enterprise mode, and it essentially drastically improve the usability of blockchains, of public blockchains. When a enterprise mode is activated, when a user interacts with a smart contract, that experience becomes gasless. So that capability essentially maps to the real world a lot closer than other public blockchains because the need of a native token. In my opinion, it removes one of the biggest complexities interacting with smart contracts, with on-chain systems, and that's the need to go to an exchange, KYC, buy the native token, whether if it's BNB or Matic or Ether, and then interact with that smart contract, even though if you already have the crypto asset, right? So we got that inspiration and demand from our corporate and enterprise customers. And I feel that's the way where we can onboard millions of users, right? Because currently the ecosystem is quite small in comparison to the wider world. And we're hoping to use this capability as demanded by our enterprise customers to onboard millions and millions of users and then merge that with the wider Web3 ecosystem.
Interesting. How do you make the transaction fees or eliminate the transaction fees essentially, or gas fees, excuse me, when someone is doing a transaction? Do you have like a certain process for that?
Yeah, exactly right. Firstly, Lightlink is a open and permissionless and a public blockchain. So firstly, I just need to clarify, there is a native gas mode, right? Like very similar to Optimism, Arbitrum, users, developers can deploy smart contracts, bridge their assets over and use Ether as a native token. You know, we wanted to lower the barrier to entry. So there are a lot of similarities to other layer twos, being its high throughput, low latency, low cost, and therefore it can address a lot of issues with layer ones. But for the engaged enterprise customers, whether if they're crypto companies or large Web2 companies, we flipped the tokenomics upside down to enable gasless transactions for users. So instead of user paying for the gas, it's the enterprise customer that's paying the gas. And what we have done on the back end natively into the blockchain is it's not a gas relay where, you know, you can do that on Ethereum if you wanted to pay transaction fee on behalf of somebody else. we flipped to tokenomics a little bit using Lightning tokens as a way to impose a quota to your daily capacity, and the enterprise customers would pay transaction fees, gas, in bulk, in fiat. So, and therefore, you have more predictable, more certain, more reserved gas fee and execution environments for those smart contracts. Hopefully, I've explained it.
Got it.
Yeah, great.
Interesting. Did you invent that to create like a better solution for enterprise, or is this something that's for everybody to use, or how do you want to tailor that?
The system is for everyone to use, right? Like we have game developers, NFT ticketing capabilities, as well as large media companies, right? It's a different way to view tokenomics. So as opposed to supply and demand, we're introducing a new economic model, and that's buying bulk. So as opposed to go and bid for your grains in wheat or, you know, petrol, as, you know, people do in the supply and demand environment, you go to Costco, and because, yeah, that bulk buying capability mixed in with supply and demand gives you a more efficient economy. So that capability is available for everybody. There are many different types of businesses using this capability, as long as, you know, it helps their business, right? We saw this demand came up when I talked to many CTOs in larger businesses. When they interact with a large public blockchain, you know, they have their own place, right? Like substantial value, where value and interoperability and larger economies are held, right? Like large public blockchains, layer ones, has its place. We're not trying to replace that in any way. But when I talk to a large CTO, CTO from a larger company, they would ask questions such as, how much does each transaction cost? What is my infrastructure cost for the next 6 months? And for a lot of public blockchains, that question simply cannot be answered because there is such a fluctuation of gas fees and monthly transactional costs.
What industry or niche would you say that this is most built for? Do you guys want, you know, this being used as an L2 within the gaming space, within maybe ticketing and events, within the metaverse, identity? I mean, there's millions of different areas where blockchain can have quite an impact today. And I think we've seen that quite broadly. Do you imagine this, you know, better fitting certain industries over others? Or do you think, you know, overall, you know, Lightlink is just a really broadly strong L2?
Yeah, we're a layer 2 infrastructure, right? So we welcome different developers to explore use cases that's beneficial for them. In some of the scenarios, it is best suited comparing to others, right? Of course, we welcome CBDC pilots or payment systems or supply chain system to be built on top. But what I'm hoping to do is foster a vibrant Web3 ecosystem via incentives provided by our foundation. So there is a wide array of feature sets as infrastructure, whether if it's an NFT marketplace or a DeFi ecosystem or borrowing or lending, you know, all kinds of Web3 value add we can have within the ecosystem. And as you remove the need for a native token, new use cases are unlocked. And that's quite interesting, something that we've discovered along with our builders in the space, right? So take Uniswap as an example. Uniswap used AMM as an algorithm because it's the most efficient. If you're trying to do other types of trading on top of Uniswap, it becomes quite cost prohibitive in terms of gas. But once you sort of place the gas as a secondary concern, because we're on a layer 2, gas is a lot more efficient. And through enterprise mode, there are different economics model you can explore around gas. If you don't need to worry about gas as much, you can explore other trading models.
Hey guys, quick message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting takes your desire for anonymity seriously. and allows you to play without the need to worry about identity checks and personal information. It's a betting site, not an investment site, so you should be able to just have fun. As a top trusted Bitcoin betting site, Nitro Betting has truly got your back. Now, back to the episode, guys.
And that's super, super exciting because you pass on the usability and this extra feature set to users who are trying to do DEX trades, right? So that's just one of the innovation. By changing the economics model, you can unlock other type of innovation. And that's really cool. In terms of gaming,
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Talk to Web3 game developers. It's quite interesting because a lot of game developers have this concept of let's put everything on the same chain, right? So that makes sense to a degree, right? Like if you have USDT as rewards or valuable PFPs as your subscription or your identity, it makes sense to have that on Polygon or Binance or, you know, Ethereum, right? Because that's where the largest economy is and the largest marketplaces are, the most interoperable. But when you talk about a game, there are actually many other transactions that's generated that's valuable, but not might not be valuable to everybody else. So those transactions are things like, what level am I? How many points did I get? How long have I played this game at, right? And when the game developers try to put that onto the same chain, it becomes super cost prohibitive, right? So if you have 50,000 users every day and they play the game a couple of times a day, it just becomes very, very cost prohibitive, like tens and thousands of dollars in terms of gas transactions you need to facilitate on a daily basis, even on the layer two, on the current layer two, right? So what we're trying to provide is a alternative layer two where you can store those transactions, important record that's valuable to you. And it is important to put them on chain because if you have another game that's built by the same developer or within the same ecosystem, say, for example, the Animoca portfolio account companies as example, you would want to have a better user experience if you played another game in the ecosystem. You know, I'm no longer a beginner. I've spent and invested hundreds of hours into this ecosystem, and therefore, when a new experience opens up, I don't want to start from ground up again, right? So that information is super important to be surfaced on chain. So, and I was saying earlier, it can't be surfaced onto a layer one, right? Because it's cost prohibitive, it's slow, it's low latency. And therefore, layer two is the obvious answer. But many of the layer twos operate a linear pricing model. By that, I mean, you know, you pay 1 cent for a transaction, and if you conduct 100 transactions, it's a dollar, right? So it increases linearly. And that's also cost prohibitive because if you have a million users, you'd be paying, you know, substantial amount every on a daily basis. So that's why we operate a non-linear model in the enterprise mode. So for gamers who are playing this game, it's a frictionless experience because it's gasless. For developers, it's easy to understand because you call a smart contract and you remove that complexity. And from a pricing perspective, you know how much infrastructure costs you're going to spend for the next, you know, 6 months. I went on a little bit.
Oh, no worries.
But yeah, there are many different industries, and gaming is fascinating.
I know you guys are built on top of Ethereum, but do you guys have any ambition to build on top of another L1 at some point?
Yeah, great question. We chose Ethereum because it's the largest, in my opinion, the most vibrant in its economy. Mm-hmm. It has the highest security spend when you look at the amount of node operators, amount of crypto assets staked. So from a decentralization security perspective, it's the best balance from my perspective. Now, when we speak to other layer ones, it's quite interesting because they also want to be the layer one that captures attention, right? So we are considering, can we post some proofs onto other layer ones to further increase the security and validity of the proofs that we post on layer one.
In terms of native tokens, do you guys have one?
So when developers deploy contracts, when users interact with smart contracts on Lightlink without engaging the enterprise mode, it is Ether. And we chose that deliberately to lower the barrier to entry because it's understood and everybody has Ether if you're on Ethereum. So we wanted to introduce the technology to more hands. But for enterprise customers, we use Lightlink token as a way to meter your transaction. So it becomes a mechanics of gas in the economics model. But in the future, when we do launch a Lightlink token to the public, we wanted it to represent the value of the network and as well as governance capabilities for the network. So yeah, there is intent. It is something that we're working on.
What's on your guys' roadmap currently? I was going through it on your website and saw that in Q4, at least for 2023, you guys were working on public transport project, a liquidity hub, any of that stuff implemented as of right now, or is that stuff that's coming out later on?
We have a lot of ambitions from a technology. It's actually three questions in one, essentially.
Sure.
Firstly, technology has to iterate and improve. We're looking at how can we use other data availability layers or optimize our on-chain proofs and improving the blockchain fundamentals, right? By having further decentralization, additional redundancy, so on and so forth. It's a never-ending innovation marathon, essentially, from a blockchain infrastructure perspective. From a Web3 ecosystem perspective, we are onboarding more and more dApps, important players in the Web3 world to participate in the in our ecosystem. And lastly, from an enterprise customer acquisition perspective, we're backed by one of the largest conglomerates in Asia that owns retail, telcos, and many other traditional industries. So it's about how can we help those organizations to discover more value using Web3 technology. And we've recently signed up a very large media company as well, and that's super interesting, unlocking 1.3 million users in Feb 2024. So having all of those three things are, you know, important part of the roadmap. But what I'm hoping to see in a year or a year and a half from now is the convergence of the enterprise user base with Web3 technology, right? So imagine a public transportation app. You have a very simple digital wallet and the use case is just payments, right? You ride the bus, you pay the bus driver or the bus company. So it's just a digital wallet with payments capability. But as you have millions and millions of users using this ecosystem, we can start unlocking more features using the existing Web3 ecosystem. So by introducing features like micro-lending, by better saving rates, you know, in the terminology that normal participants understand, that is how I figure to solve the onboarding onto Web3 problem, right? Because like I said before, the industry is quite small. And if let's see what it looks like if we added millions and millions of users to this ecosystem. And this is how we intend to do it.
So here's a fun question. If you could have any partnership with any enterprise company, financial institution, et cetera, startup in the world, and you could decide whoever, like there's no bounds, there's no limit, who would you want to work with ideally and why? What would you want to develop with them?
It's almost like the Holy Grails type of question in the Web3 world. And the common answer here, and it's the same as our answer, is a CBDC project. How can we replace money, right? And I mean, actually, not how we can replace money, how can we add value to existing digital wallets? How can we add more value to money, right? So there are many, all the central banks around the world are building this capability, whether it's through private blockchains, and a lot of them have experimented with private blockchains and large public, public layer ones. But as I was talking about earlier in the show, there are limitations to both approaches. So it should work on a layer two and be interoperable. And that's when it becomes truly awesome, right? Imagine you have AMMs and micro lending and all of these technology that is transparent, not opaque, right? Like, I don't know what my bank is doing with my money, fiat money in the bank, right? But when these protocols are transparent, that radical transparency gives a whole new different financial infrastructure. And the most value you can add is existing economy, right? The world. So when you look at economies, probably in more emergent areas, and those are places where we have some piloting, whether if it's in Southeast Asia or in different parts of Africa, those are the areas which potentially we can benefit by adding value to their existing money. And that's sort of the holy grail, I guess, for all the Web3 companies, right? We can't exist in isolation. We live in the real world. Let's work with traditional industries to add substantial value.
It's definitely the crypto utopia we all crave for and we all hope for. And what do you think about CBDCs? It's a very controversial technological development these days. It's gone from something that is supposed to be incredibly useful and is supposed to help people, lift people up, give people options, transparency, speed, cost effectiveness, pull people out of poverty, you name it, everything under the umbrella. But at the same time, it's also presented a tremendous amount of concerns too, regards to privacy and regards to capital controls, et cetera. What do you think about it in terms of the way people are going about developing and potentially implementing CBDCs today? I know there's a million different kind of projects out there and everyone's got their own take, but what's your general opinion?
Money will be digital. So when you look at the DC in the CBDC, right? Like it will be digital, and it is largely digital already today. It is issued by central banks, probably not directly to retail users, but it is largely digital already. Every time we tap our phone or tap our credit card or conduct a internet-based transfer, it is digital. Now, the value of blockchain, Web3 tech, adding to existing well-established economies is relatively not so great, you know, because Apple Pay works great, you know, MasterCard works great. Why use a different technology? And this is where I think in less developed country economies with less digital infrastructure, this technology adds substantial value because it's a leapfrogging technology, right? So as an analogy, Alipay, digital payments, became a lot more popular in Asian countries because it didn't have as much of a credit card presence. So bypassing the entire credit card network and go straight to a digital mobile app-based payment. So it's an evolution, and I think just happens that blockchain-based technology is the best technology for this type of use case. Now, what flavor of blockchain technology does this take in? Whether if it's a public blockchain, large, inefficient, low scale, costly, to a complete opposite end to that spectrum, which is, you know, permissioned type of infrastructure. And this is where most of the CBDC use cases are being taken into. That has its own limitations too, but those are the decisions that policymakers need to, you know, push forward. And at the same time, is USDT or USDC a CBDC, right? That's a really interesting question and conversation as well.
Yeah, the whole point of it, you know, digital currency and currency already kind of being digital, I think, you know, resonates a lot with me. I don't remember the last time I saw a physical dollar. I'm from the United States. I live in Colombia, and I only ever really use physical fiat money here in Colombia because it's still very common. But in the US, yeah. I don't remember the last time I saw a physical dollar. Even when I live there, like I use credit cards, I use debit cards, I do transfers. I use PayPal, I use Venmo, I use Zelle. Like I don't, yeah, it's crazy when you think about it. It kind of is digital and we don't really think about it. So CBDCs are not as big of a step, I feel. It's just from an economic, tokenomic standpoint, you know, how it works, I think, under the hood.
Yeah, exactly. And we hope that it will be radically transparent. It will be interoperable and composable, and it is, you know, for the public to see, right? Mm-hmm. But depending on where you stand, your view of the world, those implementations will take on different configurations.
It's a very interesting, exciting time we live in. A lot of things are going on all at once, I think more than it ever has happened in economics, finance, and within the blockchain industry. Really cool what you guys are working on, and I love what you guys are doing. Where can people go to check it out, to learn a bit more about Lightlink and how you guys function, what makes you different, as well as if you're a developer and you want to build with Lightlink and use it, integrate it? Are there separate documentation to go to? Where do you want to direct people?
Yeah, lightlink.io would be the destination to learn more about us. There will be links to developer documentation, access, invitation to our Discord. And we're fairly open and young and hungry and, you know, come and chat with us. Love to see you guys build on top of Lightlink. We're also on X, Twitter, and our handle is Lightlink Chain.
If you're another protocol, if you're a company, they want to work with you guys directly, should they go somewhere in particular or just the same route?
Yeah, lightlink.io will be the best place to reach out.
Awesome. What about you? If someone wants to connect with you, maybe have a conversation, where can they find you online?
Sure. I'm Roy Hui at Twitter, X. I'm also Roy Hui at LinkedIn. So feel free to send me a DM.
Awesome. Roy, thanks for taking the time to come on the show. Really appreciate it. Love, again, what you guys are doing with Lightlink. I think it's super important to really push the envelope with L2s and expand what we can do in the space and improve on so many things, transaction speed, costs, you know, expandability, interoperability, all these things. So thank you, man. Really appreciate you sharing all this knowledge.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Final message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting gives you so many options to bet, wager, play with a deep sports book from NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, MMA, to motorsports, poker, blackjack, esports, Rocket League, Call of Duty. You name it. There's plenty of diversity and choice. So go to nitrobetting.eu to experience everything they have to offer. All links are in the description for the episode, and see you guys on the next one.